Let's pray. Father God, thanks for time together. Thanks for your presence. Thanks for your word. Father, thank you for Jesus and for sending him to be with us, to teach us your will and your ways, and to offer himself for us so that we could sit here tonight and talk to you and approach you and be your kids and be loved by you and be able to know that. I pray that these people would hear what you would have to say to them tonight through me, and that you would use my voice and the words that you've had me dwell on and think about to encourage them and to invite them into a deeper, more intimate relationship with you. I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. A while back, I had the privilege of going to an audiologist. And this audiologist asked me to fill out paperwork, and whenever you fill out paperwork, you always have to fill out your occupation. And when you fill out pastor as your occupation, it gets lots of cool responses. People want to confess to you, or, you know, or they want to tell you their life story, or they want to try to horrify you with the horrible things they've done. Or I always get kind of a kick out of that. Like, we hear people's confessions and acknowledgments of sin all the time, and then people are always like, wow, maybe he has virgin ears and he's never heard the really bad things. And I'm going, wow, I've heard a lot more bad things than I suspect you have. And so, anyway, and this audiologist's response to meeting with me was that she had kind of a hand-up kind of thing, like, oh, I see you're a pastor. And then she kind of went off immediately into, well, I really don't have believe in God. I'm more of a scientist and blah, blah, blah. So she was already making excuses, like, please don't invite me to your church, and please don't embarrass me by asking me God questions, and please don't be one of those crazy pastor types. So, being the nice person that I am, I decided I wouldn't, and I was just being nice. But at some point, after having done the whole ear examination and discovering that I had lost this hearing in my ear, she was explaining to me how the ear worked. And I was listening as best I could as she explained this amazing thing that we call a human ear. Like, it is unbelievable that sound waves, whatever those are, go flipping through the world around us and they hit our eardrum, and that sends a little sound that hits three little bones that tremble at very, you know, there's these tiny little bones. I mean, they're not like bones, they're bones, like little tiny, tiny bones. And they kind of like a drum, they kind of move really quickly, and then that sends signals up this kind of conical shaped thing that keeps expanding, and then, I don't know, somehow the impulses of that transfer out into some kind of a nerve base that shoots up into your brain, and then your brain determines that that sound is that, you know, or that sound is whatever that sound is, the clink of a dish. And so you kind of go, wow, that's amazing. And then she says, and now because you've lost hearing in one ear, you're going to have a whole lot of trouble trying to figure out where sound comes from. So, like in the old days when you hear a siren, you pull off to the side of the road, because please, people, that's what you're supposed to do, okay? And if you're not doing that, just start, okay? But anyway, and I know you got your music cranked and you're grooving out, but, you know, really, but anyway, that's all aside. So what happens is you hear this sound, and the sound of the siren comes, and it hits this eardrum, and it hits this eardrum, and there's like a billionth of a trillionth of a gazillionth of a second between when it hits that eardrum, and so your little brain goes, oh, that sound is coming from there, and it makes you turn, And then you go, oh, that sound is coming from over there. Oh, there's the ambulance. And then you pull over like you're supposed to do. And so it's really cool. Like, I'm sitting there listening to her explain all this, and I'm just blown away. And she's explaining now how that'll be harder for me because I won't be able to figure out where sounds are coming from because there are certain sounds I can't hear and certain noises I can't hear because part of this thing got damaged. And I'm just like, wow. Like, I'm all blown away. And she's talking about this like it's just some matter-of-fact scientific thing that doesn't matter. And I'm going, wow, are you crazy? And so, like, this is amazing stuff. So I'm, like, just sucking it all up. And I said, so how does this all happen if there's not a God? And she says, well, it's natural selection and, you know, this whole process. And we develop and, you know, there's all these, and I said, so there's like a whole series of happy little accidents, and then, you know, all of a sudden we got these really cool things called ears. Like, really? And you actually, like, believe that? So I said, I admire your faith, because, you know, I don't have that kind of faith. Like, I could not believe that this would just all be accidental, that this entire amazing ear that hears these unbelievable sounds and can determine where they come from and what they are and do all this wonderful distinguishing thing, which, by the way, you don't realize how much you miss until you don't have it. It's unbelievable. And she got a little sheepish and I probably a little angry, and she said, well, it's not like that, you know, I don't know, it's complicated. And I said, okay, whatever. And so we didn't go any further. And I thought, what a miracle that we can hear. What a miracle that we can see. What a miracle that we breathe in and breathe out, and that there's this incredible world around us that's all in balance and has all these wonderful things that happen. And because of that, we exist and live. And it's like, and it just opened my eyes again to all the miracles that are around us. And tonight we're going to talk about one of Jesus' cool miracles, and I just want to read the verses. It's John chapter 6, and we're going to start at verse 45. And it says, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. Now, you remember from last week that... I'm in Mark. Did I say John? I am so sorry. See, I can't see and I can't hear. Anyway, Mark chapter 6, verse 45. Immediately Jesus made his disciples get in the boat. Last week Eric talked about feeding 5,000, at least 5,000 men, so who knows how many people total, out of a few baskets of a few pieces of bread and a couple fish, and then they picked up a whole bunch at the end, and so all the people that were there are all excited. And then Jesus makes the people get into the, makes his disciples get into the boat while he dismissed the crowd. And basically, he's really dismissing the crowd now. He's just saying, really, show's over, people. You know, we're not going to do anything more. No, we're not going to be feeding you breakfast. You know, you had your meal. This is it. You're done. Go away. Stop. No more cool stuff today. Jesus is leaving. And immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat, go ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. When evening came, the boat was in the middle of the lake and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. About the fourth watch of the night, which is between 3 o'clock and 6 o'clock in the morning, by the way. So 3 o'clock in the morning, sometime after that. He went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. Then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened. When they had crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret and anchored there. As soon as they got out of the boat, people recognized Jesus, They ran throughout the whole region and carried the sick on mats to wherever they heard he was, and wherever he went, into villages, towns, and countrysides, they placed the sick in the marketplaces. They begged him to let them touch even the edge of his cloak, and all who touched him were healed. Talking to a lot of you over the years and getting to know you, in your moments of doubt, and certainly in my moments of doubt, I kind of have this standard thing that I go back to. You know, if God would just give me a miracle, if I could just see a miracle, if just one of those cool things like what happened in the Bible would happen to me, I would so believe. It would be so cool. If I saw a miracle, then God would be real. One of our issues with God is that he just seems far away. He just seems distant. He's not physical. He's not present. We can't touch him. We can't walk over and put our hands on him. We have this weird thing that we have to deal with, and that's that God is a spirit, and that he doesn't seem to be here. Now, by the way, when you walk with God long enough, you'll develop this amazing sense of the presence of God. But for most of us, at various times in our life, when we're going particularly through the doubt times in our life, we just say, if I saw a miracle, if I saw somebody walking on water, really? Like, wow. Then I would so believe. Then I would believe in God. Then it would be real. Now, I want to go a little further with that, because we also think that if we just saw a miracle, if there was a miracle, then our needs could be met, you know? I mean, that's really what happened when we talked about what we talked about last night. All our physical, you know, the physical needs of the people were met. They all got to eat a nice meal. They got fish and bread. They all got fed. If there were miracles, then I wouldn't ever have to worry about whether I was going to eat or be provided for, taken care of, have a roof over my head. I'd be okay. But of course, most of us don't stay with just our needs being met. What we really want is our desires met. Matter of fact, you notice that God promises to meet our needs. He says we can ask him for the desire of our heart. But he doesn't promise to give us the desire of our heart. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that. One is our desires often are not all that great, and they're not what's best for us. And we can get so fixated on them that we forget about God. And so a lot of times, if we think if a miracle could happen, then at least all my desires would be fulfilled. You know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a jockey. And if God worked a miracle, you know, like I could be 4'11" and weigh 103 pounds, you know, it's possible, but God would have to clearly work a miracle. You guys think I'm joking? I swear I wanted to be a jockey. That was like, I read every horse book there ever was to read when I was a kid. I loved Black Beauty and Fury and all that. Anyway, I wanted to race horses. I wanted to be a jockey. Not going to happen. Unless there's a miracle, right? If I get a miracle, then I get to be a jockey. Then I can do whatever. And the real truth is, we think and we say and we believe that if I saw a miracle, then I would really trust God. Right? If I just saw a miracle, then I would trust God. Then I would believe. Then it would be okay. Let me tell you the reality of miracles. Miracles didn't work. We think they should, but they didn't. All these people just got fed. 5,000 people. Wow. And they won't go away. Matter of fact, when it says that Jesus dismissed the crowd, the word dismissed there is like, go, done. Go away, get out of here. Because why? Huh. Hey, if he fed me today, maybe he'll feed me tomorrow. If he gave me this good stuff, maybe he'll give me some other good stuff. Maybe I'll get some other cool things. Who knows? I mean, this guy's got some power. And they're kind of, by the way, they're sort of forming ranks because they're going to try to over... I mean, one of the big things is they have this huge crowd. They have 5,000 men. You know, matter of fact, when they had fed them the loaves, they got them to sit in certain sections in certain ways. And it's kind of like how you would arrange an army. And the reason for that was so that you could feed them easily. But they're thinking, hey, we can overthrow the Roman government. We can put this guy in charge. He's a lot better than Caesar. He gives us really cool stuff. He feeds us. This is awesome. If you see a miracle and you experience a miracle, what you want is more. I've told the story before about how Keith Brunson at a prayer meeting, when I was asked for prayer because my knee was all screwed up, and he came in or he was told to go get some olive oil so they could anoint me and pray over me, and he couldn't find any olive oil, so he brought in the Pam spray. Okay, that was a joke. And so, but we sprayed Pam spray on my knee, and then we all laughed, and then Russ reminded us that I had actually asked for prayer from the elders and not just a humorous episode. And so they prayed, and my knee was all better. Like the next morning, I could run up and down the stairs at the apartment we lived in then, and I thought, this is so cool. And I'd been to the doctor, and the doctor had diagnosed it as some kind of a horrible thing where, I don't know, the cartilage was gone, and there was bone on bone, and I was going to live in pain, and now it's fine. So I think, well, that's a really cool miracle. And then I have this really cool miracle where this surgeon goes in and repairs my neck, and I regain the use of my arm and my hands, and all the pain goes away in my shoulder. And then I think, yeah, but God, what about that whole hearing thing, you know? That'd be nice. You know, like, one miracle isn't enough. We want more. We're just greedy. We just want more and more and more. The reality, if we saw a miracle, is not only would we want more, we'd find an alternative explanation. We always find alternative explanations for the miracles in our lives. It's kind of cool. It started way back. I love that that this happened back in when Moses was in Egypt, and God's inviting him to lead the people out of Egypt, and he's going, well, really, you know, you should send somebody else. You should send somebody who can talk. You should send somebody like Aaron, you know. Here I am, send Aaron. You know, it's like we're going to volunteer, but not really. And then God says, Moses says, if I go tell them this stuff, what are they going to do? What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say the Lord did not appear to you? Because he's going to go say, God appeared to me and said that you're supposed to let my people go. And he's going to go tell the Pharaoh of Egypt this. It's like, right, you know, that's really going to happen. Moses isn't stupid. He says, you know, this ain't going to work. And so God says to him, what's that in your hand? A staff, he said. The Lord said, throw it on the ground. Moses threw it on the ground, and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, reach out your hand and take it by the tail. Which, you know, God is good about that. And Moses is going, yeah, right. You know, really? Pick it up by the... Yeah, it was a stick a moment ago. Now I turned it into a snake. So that's really cool. He gives them this really cool thing to do, a couple other things that he can do. So guess what happens when they actually do this? The Lord said to Moses, when Pharaoh says to you, perform a miracle, then say to Aaron, take your staff and throw it down before Pharaoh, and it will become a snake. So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did just as the Lord commanded. Aaron threw his staff down in front of Pharaoh and his officials, and it became a snake. It was, wow, a miracle. Sure, go. Your God is really powerful. That's great. No, that's not what they said. Pharaoh summoned wise men and sorcerers and the Egyptian magicians, and they all did the same things as by their secret arts. Each one threw down his staff, and it became a snake. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staff. Yet Pharaoh's heart became hard, and he would not listen to them, just as the Lord had said. we will always find an alternate explanation. When these disciples see Jesus walking on water, what's their first reaction? Wow, Jesus, who just fed us all those meals out of nothing, is walking on water. How cool is Jesus? This is so great. He's God. We're going to follow him for the rest of our lives. What was their alternate explanation? They panicked because they saw a ghost. What? It's a ghost. Really? Like, after all this cool stuff that I just did, like God saying, I just did all this. I showed you this miracle, this amazing miracle. And now you see another one, and you start rationalizing. For rational beings, we want an explanation. We want an alternate explanation. The other thing is we forget about it. I mean, really? Earlier in that day, they've all eaten this amazing meal, and now while they're struggling and they're out in the middle of this lake and there's this huge storm, they've forgotten all about the fact that they got a free meal earlier. An amazingly provided for them meal. They forgot all about that. We forget about our miracles. I have to think about that story of when my knee got healed regularly. I have to write it down. I tell it so I won't forget it. It was a miraculous thing. It was amazing. But I think, well, maybe the doctor just misdiagnosed. Maybe there's power in hamstring, you know? Like, we don't know, right? Right? But there's got to be some kind of an explanation. It couldn't be that God just loves his kid and decided that it was painful to watch him walk up and down stairs or crawl up and down the stairs at his apartment, and he just wanted to make his knee not hurt anymore. But you say, no, really, Rod, if I saw a miracle, a really big miracle, if somebody fed a whole bunch of people out of, you know, thousands of people out of a few loaves of bread and some fish, I would so believe. Then I want to ask you a question. Where were all these folks when Jesus was crucified? Where were all these people so convinced by this amazing miracle that God was exactly who he says he was when Jesus was brought to the cross? When he went through his trial, where were they? Frankly, where were the disciples who not only saw this miracle but have seen all these other miracles? Where were they? They forgot about it. They found alternative explanations. They were afraid they'd die with him. Really? You would be afraid that you would die with Jesus after you see him walking on water, feeding people, raising people from the dead, making sick people whole? Really? Apparently. There's no end to our decision, our ways of rationalizing what we see. I do want to give you some truths to hang on to. These are important truths, I think. Truths that you can kind of think about and maybe apply in your own life. The first truth is just at the end of a really long day when Jesus has worked this amazing miracle, when Jesus is preaching and teaching and inviting people into relationship with God, at the end of that long day, Jesus went alone and he prayed. We talked this year a lot about rest at the Village, and we're kind of concentrating on that. And in our meetings, we're kind of spending areas of saying, we need to mature in some areas, and one of them was finances, and one of them was in dealing with our relationships. But one of the other big ones for us this year was to learn how to rest. Jesus knows how to rest. He goes alone to spend time with his Father. If you want to experience the power and the presence of God, you have got to get alone and pray and spend time with God. You've got to do it. All the other stuff in your life pales in comparison to that time. That's a truth you can hang on to. Jesus is watching over you when you're in a storm. These disciples are out there. They're rowing like mad. and they're not, and they got a headwind against them, and they're making no progress. This is like me rowing a boat. I remember at Encanto Park, Kathy, I used to take her there on a date, and, you know, and we would get those little paddle boats, and I would just paddle as fast as I could, but this wind would come up against you, and like, really, I'm never going to make it to the dock, not as long as I live, you know? And that's where these people are. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. They have been rowing all night. Everything, every muscle is aching. They are just screaming in pain. It's 7 miles across this lake. They've done it. Half of them are fishermen. They've done it a million times. And it's just horrible. And when they're out there struggling, when they're out there in the middle of the sea, when there's no help available, Jesus is watching over them. I don't know if he's watching from the mountain or if he's watching from the beach. Unlike Jimmy, I haven't been over there, so I don't know what the landscape looks like. I don't know if he came down off the mountain after he prayed and if he's just looking out from the beach and he sees them or if he sees them from the hill. I don't know how he sees them, but I know that he's watching over them. And he cares about them. When they're out there in the boat and they're terrified in the midst of a storm, Jesus cares about them. And it's interesting that he comes walking, and he's not actually walking towards them. He's just going to walk to the other side where he's going to meet them, which is going to be kind of interesting when they get out the boat and go, wait, we rowed all night, and now we're here, and you're already here. I mean, that would have been a cool explanation here. But they actually see Jesus, and Jesus turns, and he has compassion on them. So he's not just going, he doesn't walk by them. He doesn't ignore them. So often we believe that Jesus just ignores us, that he doesn't see us, that he doesn't feel our needs, that he's not present, that he doesn't care. The truth is, he turns his eyes toward them and he has compassion on them instantly. He speaks to them in their terrified state, in their scared state, and he says, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. It's hard to live in this world when we try to make sense of all the stuff. We have pain, we have death, and we have struggles, and we have things that just don't make sense, and we work so hard, and stuff doesn't come from our labor. And Jesus is saying, take courage, don't be afraid. And between those two phrases, he says, it is I. And really he's saying, I'm the great I am. He's saying, I'm God. I care about you. And then he climbs into the boat with them. One of the great things that I take comfort in this world is that I know that Jesus suffered in every way like I suffer. That Jesus has struggled in every way like I struggled. That Jesus has been tempted in every way like I'm tempted, and far more. There is nothing that I experience that Jesus didn't experience and knows and feels and realizes the impact of to degrees that none of us can imagine. The truth you can hang on to is that Jesus is compassionate for you. He cares about you. He's not going to just let you out there drifting forever in this boat that you can never make progress in. He's there. He has compassion. And then here's another truth you can hang on to. He has power over all things. He has power over nature. He has power over demons. He has power over everything. There's nothing that he can't do. He can walk on water, for crying out loud. He can feed 5,000 people out of a few loaves and fishes. By the way, folks, it's called the Christian faith. It's not called the Christian reason. Okay. A lot of times people say to me, prove it. I can't. I can't prove that Jesus is God. I can't prove that God is who he says he is. I can't prove that he's done anything. called the Christian faith. You have to believe it. Not know it, believe it, trust it. It can't be proved. But even though it can't be proved, it can be experienced. The coolest thing about getting old, and trust me, I'm getting there. I'm 58 years old. The cool thing about being 58 years old is I get to look back on a whole lot of years of God's faithfulness to me and His care for me and His provision for me and His love for me. And I can't prove that to you. I can't say, well, really, if you just do these right things, then it'll all happen to you too. Because you know what? I didn't do right things. And I still don't do right things. But the cool thing about having grown up in the Christian faith, the cool thing about knowing God from the very beginning of my days, the cool thing about knowing that and experiencing that is just that time and time and time and time again, God proves Himself. I was just having a conversation with my mother the other day. She's 81 years old, and she was, like, worried about something. I said, and I was being goofy, but I said, yeah, Mom, you know, after 81 years of taking care of you, I'm sure God's going to abandon you tomorrow afternoon, you know, because, you know, you're just horrible now. And I talked to my mother this way because it gets her to laugh, and she starts giggling, and she says, oh, yeah, right, you're right. Right? Because we have to remind each other of that. Like, we have to remind each other that God cares, that God's with us. And it doesn't matter. When you're 81 years old, you still have doubts, right? Well, this time it might not work. This time it might not be okay. And we need each other to remind each other that you can walk by faith. By the way, if you walk by faith, it won't mean that you don't have doubts. Matter of fact, if you walk by faith, you will have doubts. I guarantee you. Faith and doubt are on the same continuum. You can't believe if you don't have doubt, and you can't have doubts if you don't believe. They're on the same continuum. The difference between faith and doubt, the opposite of faith and doubt is apathy. I just won't engage at all. If you engage God, you're going to have faith moments and you're going to have doubt moments. If you engage at all, you're going to have faith and doubt. And you're going to wrestle. I love blogs on the blog site when people are in their doubt cycles. I love them when they're in their faith cycles, you know, because it just happens. We push back, push either way. Faith and doubt, it's the same thing. You can't have one without the other. But overarching all that, over time, faith just wins out more and more and more and more. No miracle is going to overcome reason. You'll find a way out. What do we really want? Well, we want all those things that miracles would give us. We want healing. We want the demons to be gone. We want an easier life. We want food or clothes or friends or a spouse or a family or stuff or something good. What God gives us is His presence. That's what He offers us. And in that, we find that all that other stuff gets provided somehow. We're never quite sure how. All those other longings get met. Or God says, you don't need them yet, or now, or maybe ever. What you need is me. Comments, questions, thoughts? it's important to recognize that we experience miracles, and we all we have to open our eyes to them. We have to see them. We have to know that they're real. We also have to honor God with those miracles, like say thank you. And like I remember just rejoicing over my knee not hurting anymore, and just enjoying that, to recognize that it's not that God won't give us miracles, it's just that he it's hard for us to acknowledge them and to just say, yeah, that's real. Anyone else?
Is this thing on?
Yeah.
And I've heard tales of various scientists, famous scientists like Carl Sagan. The more they study their science, the more they realize, you know, they come to believe, you know, and even if they were believers before, it just reinforces it that much more, you know, how much of a miracle this universe is that God created. So a lot of scientists, the more they study, the more and more it reinforces their beliefs. That's what I just wanted to share.
Thank you. Girl?
I just appreciate what you have to say. I've seen many miracles in my life, and my life existence in and of itself is a miracle. And it's crazy that I find myself to be wanting more, constantly more, but I'm just not content with just being satisfied with being here and having what he has given me. And he's given me so much.
Emily?
You know, when we think about, like, what a miracle really is, it's not just God taking care of us or, you know, something amazing in the natural world happening. It's something that breaks the rules of the natural world and makes us think that there's a higher power. There's God out there who can break the rules of the world the world that we're bound by. We're bound by the natural rules. And so I know for me, you know, having experienced various things that, you know, make it clear to me that there's definitely a spiritual world and there's God and he's real, when I start to, you know, just want more of it or maybe just still think, oh, it's just not worth it, you know, how can I do that when I know that God is real? It starts to turn into good old-fashioned rebellion, where it's like, okay, right. I already know right. God's real, and if it's just not worth it to me, you know, it's not that I don't know. It's not that those miracles didn't make any difference. It's just that my rebellion is stronger than that.
Right.
You know, I'm okay with the fact that there's a spirit world, and somehow I'm okay with ignoring it sometimes. You know, ignoring God and his power.
Thanks. I'm going to wrap this up because it's hot, but we can talk more. One of the, just to piggyback on that, and this is just a side for No Extra Charge, it was really funny. A guy once said to me, what happens if there are no natural laws? What happens if that's just God acting consistently? Anyway, you can have that for free. Let's close in just in a time of worship, and let's as we worship, let's just think about the miracles, the miracle of our lives, the miracles that are in our lives, and let's spend some time reflecting on the beauty of what God's done in our lives. And then we can respond in really cool ways to that. If you're in the doubt phase of your faith and you need somebody to pray over you, lift you up to God, we have the sinner's chair. And it's not that you're evil if you go sit in it. What you are is someone who is struggling either with your own sin, the sin of other people, or sin in this world. And if you go sit there, someone will come and pray over you and lift you up to God. And just give them a sentence or two of why you need prayer, and then they'll pray over you and lift you up. If you know Jesus, this one who walked on the water, you know him, and you've committed your life to following him, and maybe you just made that decision now. Maybe you're just saying, okay, I'm going to believe. Then come and take bread and break a piece off. And this is wine and this is grape juice. And take this bread and this wine or the juice. And as you take it in, remember that his body was broken for you, and his blood was shed for you. But the greatest miracle of all is the miracle of life that he gives. There's a great old Jewish phrase, "Lachaim," to life. So as you take it in, think, this is life to life, my eternal life. Take it, eat it, and remember and believe what he did for you. And then finally, if you come prepared to bring an offering, give a gift, put it in a basket, and then pass the basket back. And if you're visiting, there's no expectation that you would give, and no requirement that you do so at all. Let's worship.